Welcome back to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and we're going to pick up here with a conversation we left off last week about Colorectal Awareness Month, the issues about colorectal exams and whatnot. It's a topic that you may find very uncomfortable listening to, but it's something that we feel you need to know, especially if you're 50 and over, just simply because it's time to break the barriers down. And with us this afternoon is Dr. Kiran Sarkar and Mariette Chaparro. They're from the Department of Family and Community Medicine from the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Centers. Welcome back to El Paso Primetime.
Thank you.
We were talking last time about colorectal exams, colorectal cancer in of itself, and just barely scratched the surface about the conversation about breaking down the barriers of this sort of a thing, why we should talk about it. Why be afraid of colorectal exams? Why be afraid of colorectal cancer? We're not afraid of talking about breast cancer anymore. We're barely getting around to talking about prostate cancer. These are issues that okay, you don't normally bring it up at the dinner table, but maybe you should.
That is a very good point.
So let's talk a little bit more about this. We got into the symptoms sort of a thing, but the receptors, you piqued my interest on something along that line.
So the risk factors. Colorectal cancer, there are syndromes of colorectal cancer that are very rare that run in families.
Okay.
Now, one of the things, as I've done work in this area, trying to understand how people think about colorectal cancer and some other cancers as well, is people often think that if the cancer is not in their family, then they're not at risk and they're okay. But the reality is that the majority of cancers, about 86 to 87% of colorectal cancers, occur in people that have no colorectal cancer in their family. So that is a really important point, because people should not feel reassured just because it's not in their family. They're not at risk. So that's the first point I want to make. Now, there are unusual genetic syndromes that occur in all populations. They occur in the Hispanic population as well, that are genetic syndromes that really massively increase the risk of that particular person for getting colorectal cancer. And they need to start getting tested much earlier. So if you have a family member with colorectal cancer, you should mention that to your doctor. Your doctor will want to know how old they were when they got cancer, because you should start screening 10 years before the person in your family. Now, the person in your family I'm talking about is your sibling, your brother or your sister, or your parent or a child. That's considered strong family history. So if you have that, you need to bring that up with your doctor, because then you need to start screening before the age of 50. You're considered high risk. But again, I just want to make the point that the majority of cancers occur in people that have no family history. So that's really important.
A child will ask, as will an adult who has never really come to grips with the concept of what cancer really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple process of abnormality that has a tendency to multiply quickly.
Yes. Yeah, cancer is one of the other things that you notice and realize as you talk to a lot of people is people think cancer is one disease. When are we going to cure cancer? The reality is that cancers occur in different organs, and even in the same organ, for instance, in colorectal cancer, there are different kinds of cancers depending on the type of cell that the cancer started in. Each organ is made up of lots of different kinds of cells. So the kind of cancer you can get can be very different, and the treatment is very different. And that's why treatment of cancer is such a specialized specialty now. Oncologists do that. And even within oncologists, people specialize in particular cancers, because it's just so complicated, because there are so many different kinds, and what you do for each kind is very different. So I guess that's the first point. Cancers are very different. There are hundreds and hundreds of different diseases that are cancers, and they all come with their symptoms, and they all come with their different chances of cure and so on. The other thing is that cancer is, you know, basically an abnormally multiplying cells. They're cells that are out of control. Something happens in the cell that loses control of that cell, and they grow and grow and grow. And then that's where you might feel a lump, or you feel something that's different. But the other thing that happens is that they can spread throughout the body, And then the abnormality just continues and continues. And unfortunately, it ends up basically overwhelms their body system. And that's how people get very thin, because so much of the energy is used up by the cancer. They put out toxins so people can't eat. And hopefully, if you catch it early, you can kind of prevent that whole process from happening. And that's why for every single cancer, pretty much, if you catch it early, you can cure it or have a much better outcome than if you let it nature take its course for the cancer.
When we talk about colorectal exams, there are three different types of exams that I understand?
Yes, there are. And there are lots of new tests on the way as well. There are three main tests that are recommended for screening. And so I'll describe them a little bit because they're very different and different people like different tests. So colorectal cancer is unusual because you have this choice of testing. So maybe there's something for everyone. it's not like you're married to one kind of test. You can pick.
Yeah.
So the first test, the least invasive, is called a stool guaiac test. There's lots of different names for it. It's a home blood test. Detecting test, a stool card test, guaiac. There are different names for it, but people that go to the doctor probably are familiar with it. What it is it's a set of three cards, and you take them home and you put a sample of your bowel movement on the card, and then you either bring it into your doctor's office or you mail it in, and then they test it for blood that you cannot see with the eye. And the idea is that polyps or cancers ooze blood slowly over time that you cannot see, so that on the card you can detect it with the tests. And so it's kind of a red flag to the doctor that, whoa, something's going on here. We need to do some testing to see why this person is bleeding. Now, most of the time, the test is not positive. So only about 7% of tests are positive in people that are being screened. But if it's positive, it still doesn't mean that something really bad is going on. It could be you have hemorrhoids or other conditions that are not cancer, that your colon is bleeding on the inside. So then they schedule you for a colonoscopy. Now, a colonoscopy is a follow-up test for that test, but also you can go straight to colonoscopy for screening, and that's a recommended test. So people tend to be quite familiar with the idea of colonoscopy. It's a test. It's a long, flexible tube that the doctor puts in through the rectum, and the doctor is able to look all around the colon and see if there are any abnormal findings. And if there's a polyp, which are those skin tags on the inside that can sometimes turn into cancer, they can remove them. So it's a good test from that point of view. The other difference between the two tests is that the stool test, you have to do it every year. That's the recommendation. So, you know, some people like that because they like the reassurance that they don't have to wait a long time. Next year they can check again. Some people don't like it because they don't want to be bothered with a test every year. The colonoscopy, on the other hand, once you have one and if it's normal, you don't need another one for 10 years. So some people like that because, you know, they don't have to have a test for 10 years. But some people don't like that because they'd rather be tested regularly to make sure everything's okay. So you see how the tests are very different. With a colonoscopy, it's expensive, although most insurances do cover it, but you might have a copay and deductible that you have to meet. The colonoscopy, you have to have someone with you going to the doctor's office with you because they give you medicine to make you sleepy. And the thing that people hate about the colonoscopy usually when you talk to them is that you have to drink a gallon of this stuff that clears out your colon.
Right.
And people that have had colonoscopy always relate to that very well because that's really tough. But that's the worst part of the colonoscopy, is the prep, because when you're in the a procedure, they give you medicine to sedate you. So you don't usually remember anything about the procedure itself. The tough part is actually the prep. So those are the two tests. Another test that tends not to be used very often but has a good level of scientific evidence behind it as being beneficial is called a flexible sigmoidoscopy. So it's kind of, some people think of it as a mini colonoscopy because the tube is not as long with the camera on it. It doesn't go all the way around. You can do it in the doctor's office. You don't need a sedative. And it's cheaper. And that one is recommended every 3 to 5 years as well. So you see, you have a choice. There's pros and cons to different tests. And there's things about each test that appeal to different people. So, but the point is that whatever test you choose, it does not matter. Just choose one and go with it and get tested. You know, and it can be inconvenient. And we all know, we've all been in doctor's offices and you have to wait and, you know, you have to make an appointment, you have to take time out of your day. But the point is that it's worth it for your health, because if you go through this inconvenience, you know, you can be reassured that you don't have colorectal cancer, or that colorectal cancer was prevented because we found a polyp and we were able to remove the polyp. And remember, colorectal cancer kills 50,000 Americans every year. It kills men, it kills women, it kills Hispanics, it kills African Americans, Asians, Caucasians. It, you know, it affects everybody, and it, you know, kills everybody. It's not a selective cancer that, you know, some group is protected. It's a very equal opportunity cancer, men and women.
It's an amazing process that I'm hearing here on how to detect and prevent it before it literally explodes in your body. You're doing a lecture about this and other things coming up this coming Wednesday, March 27th.
Yes, that's right. It's at the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine. It's open to the public. We're going to have a fun, long replica of a colon, 25-foot replica that you can walk through, and you can see some of these polyps in action, and really get to see what the inside of a colon looks like. We're going to have some refreshments. The lecture is 5:30 to 6:30 at the medical school in Medical Education Building, room 1200, 5001 El Paso Drive. You do need to RSVP. The telephone number is 757-3178, extension 302. And there's an email address as well.
Sure.
Maria.chaparro, C-H-A-P-A-R-R-O, at TTUHSC.edu. And we would love to see you there. I'm going to be giving that lecture together with Dr. Mark Zuckerman, who's a gastroenterologist at the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine.
And for those of you who missed all that, they'll be up on our website with all the information. Just check it out on ktep.org, as well as checking out on the archive of our previous conversation about colorectal exams and colorectal awareness month. When you talk to people, doesn't matter who, across the board, you're going to find, I assume, a little bit of resistance about talking about this, because etiquette says you don't talk about bowel movements and you don't talk about colons in public. So how do you break through that barrier and get people to open up and say, look, when's the last time you got screened? Have you ever gotten screened?
I think the biggest barrier actually is that it's not on people's radars to think about colorectal cancer. And once you start engaging people in conversation, they're very interested in finding out more and kind of doing something about it. It's just that, you know, in the kind of array of things that people are dealing with in their daily lives, and the messages that you hear about in relation to cancer tend to be breast cancer, cervical cancer, prostate cancer. But colon cancer isn't really discussed very much. But once you start engaging people and you give them the permission to talk about it, almost, it feels like, then they do. So biggest barrier is lack of knowledge and awareness.
And I'd like to add to that, because what I am observing when I'm doing presentations about the Acción program to the community, we're collaborating with one specific group called Avance in the public school districts here in El Paso. And they are in charge of giving parenting classes to parents that don't work. And so the kids go to school and they attend these educational sessions. And we've been invited to, number one, talk about the Acción program, but also to promote awareness and get those conversations started. And one of the things that I do, as well as the promotoras, is insist you're learning how to talk to your children about different kinds of things, be better parents. Let's also start to talk about health, all different kinds of health. And it's kind of funny to talk about, you know, colorectal cancer, because it deals with one of the kids' most interesting things that they always like to talk about, right? Poop kind of thing. But talk about it in a way that is going to educate the child, but also educate the husband or the mother-in-law and the grandmother. And that's what we're trying to convey, that health should always be a topic, no matter what, at the dinner table, at family gatherings, because like I always think health is wealth. And we may be poor or we may not be poor, but if we don't have health, you know, that's one of our most important things to take care of. So that's what I've been observing. And the folks that I've been giving classes to, they like that. They like to be reassured that it is okay to talk about these diseases. It's okay to talk about cancer. And that was one of the questions they asked. How do I talk about this? And we have these flyers to kind of kick off that conversation.
It's an interesting conversation, Maria, especially when you approach people where the assumption is the education doesn't rise to the occasion to be able to speak in those terms about cancers and whatnot. And yet you find that it's a life experience that actually comes through and they say, I want to learn more. I need this. And I find that more and more intellectual people with the academic smarts are the ones who are actually kind of shying away a little bit from this. I guess maybe it's just, you know, again, maybe it's just a cultural barrier, maybe. Because it crosses all board.
Yeah, and I think there's you bring up a really good point, and that's about communication. Our physician communication, scientists communicating with real people, lay people that are not trained the way that they are. And it really is an art, because we get so caught up in all our technical language, and sometimes we forget that, you know, our patient doesn't understand that. Just like if I talk to my parents in the way, in technical doctor speak, they wouldn't understand it either. So I think there's more emphasis on being more patient-centered and paying attention to the communication that a doctor is doing with a patient. And we're seeing that in a medical school curriculum. It's very much emphasized in our medical school curriculum. And we also train doctors once they graduate medical school. And that's, again, is something that we really try to emphasize, because if the patient doesn't understand what you're telling them because you're not taking the time and the effort to talk to them with words and in ways that they understand, they're really not going to be able to take care of their health. And that is really a very, very important part of what we do. The patient's role, the patient has a responsibility and a role in managing their health. Yes, the doctor has a role too. But in the end, the patient has to go away, feel comfortable that they understand, so that they can, you know, make the changes they need to make that you communicated with them in a way that they understand the importance.
People will ask, because I'll ask for some of the folks that will have this question. Diet has a lot to do with this, no?
Yes.
So how do we fix it?
Okay, so there are a number of risk factors that are not related to family history that increase your risk of certain cancers, and colorectal cancer is one of them. So you mentioned diet. So it's been shown that people that eat a lot of red meat in their diet have a higher risk of colorectal cancer. Low fiber is another thing that's kind of been going back and forth about its role in colon cancer. So that's definitely an issue. Smoking is something else that increases the risk, as is alcohol. So if you drink, you know, two drinks a day, you're at much higher risk of colorectal cancer. So those are the main dietary things. Then there are other things like exercise. A more active person is less likely to get colorectal cancer than someone who's not as active. So there are these things that seem to make a difference. We don't exactly understand why. The red meat makes sense, because there are certain compounds in meat that come in direct contact with the colon, and they're toxic to the colon and can encourage cancers. But some of these other things, it's not always exactly completely figured out why. But we know, looking at a large group of people with colon cancer and a large group of people without colon cancer, that some of the things that are common in the group that got colorectal cancer are those things. So it's the same old mantra, you know, eat lots of fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. eat white meat, you know, chicken, fish more than red meat, have a high fiber diet, drink plenty of water. don't drink, don't smoke. It's that, you know, it's not a very fun message.
I know.
I recognize that. But it goes, for, you know, across a multitude of diseases. It's the same message.
I'm sure a cardiologist would sit there and say, no, I don't want to take the red wine out of my diet because that's antioxidants I can have coursing through my veins. But you can get the same thing from a tomato, for goodness sakes.
And grapes, red grapes.
Yep, there you go. So, okay, so we've talked a little bit about diet. Maybe we should talk a little bit about exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't that also play into this as well, into the equation of trying to stay healthy?
Very much so. And exercise, as we all know, people that exercise live longer, healthier. Their mental capacity, you know, as you get older, if you exercise, your memory is better. If you exercise, the kind of age-related change in memory is reversed. You're more active. It's good for your muscles. It's good. It's good for so many different things. So, and it's good for colorectal cancer prevention as well. So it's good for your heart. And particularly for colorectal cancer, a moderate activity, you know, walking briskly 4 or 5 times a week for at least half an hour is good for your health.
And here in El Paso, I mean, we're at the touch of spring. It's beautiful outside. We've got the beautiful Franklin Mountains. I mean, what we did on New Year's Day was such a beautiful day. On New Year's Day, we went for a hike, my husband, myself, and my 5-year-old. Just to be active. And it comes back to what are you teaching your kids? What activities are you engaging your family in so that you can establish these healthy lifestyles and won't have to worry about all of these things that plague us, especially Latinos with the obesity, with hypertension, with colorectal cancer. It starts at home. It's more than just going to school and being educated on the ABCs. It's more than that. It's let's get educated about our health and stay active and stay healthy.
Maria, let me ask you, you brought it up and it just reminded me of my own family where half are great at talking about obesity and the other half wants to shy away from it. And they're the ones who are actually thinner than I am. And I'm a beefy sort of a guy, but, you know, my diet isn't always the best, and I understand that. But why is it that obesity in Latinos is so hard to talk about now?
I think because, and I'm only talking about my family experience, okay, so I can't generalize for everybody that's Latino, Mexican American, Chicano.
I understand.
But there are some families that, ay, como te ves flaco, ay, como estás flaca, you know, you look so thin, and if you're thin, that means you're unhealthy. So we got to feed you so that you could be healthy. And what I see is that if you're 20 pounds overweight, you're still looking pretty good to some families and to some cultures. And it's accepted more. It means that, hey, you're making money, so you have enough money to buy the good food, which really maybe it's not the good food, but hey, you can afford more to eat out. You could buy the cheves and the cerveza and all of that stuff. So I think it's this we accept it more because at least we're not starving or we're not lacking for nothing. For anything, I think that's my opinion on it, and it's hard to change those. When one starts to get active, or when one person starts to change behavior, sometimes the rest of the family look at that individual and go, "Well, what's wrong with him? Why all of a sudden he or she is doing that? Well, what's wrong with how are we doing things?" And it's so hard to break out of those stereotypes and. We need to start changing our attitudes about our health and changing our attitudes about being active and really educating ourselves about these diseases that are killing us. We're always reacting to something instead of being proactive and preventing these things. And like we were talking about earlier, if you go back to the old school Mexican or Indio diet of beans, tomate, aguacate, corn tortillas with no lard, I would really think that would make chile, especially chile, would really turn the table on how we live instead of adding the processed meats that Dr. Shokar talked about. How many families gatherings have you been to where they have like tacos de buche with weenies and then I see them add manteca and I'm going, oh dear God, you know, or weenies in the frijoles. It's Lent, and the other day I got served a plate of lentejas with bacon. And I'm like, wait a minute, that defeats the whole purpose of Fridays. you know, so we have to really start thinking about how we cook and go old school without the added things that really shouldn't be there. That wasn't being added in my grandmother's day.
Truly, if you look at the Incas and the Mayans and the Aztecas, if you look at their diets, one of the things to note is that the beans were always cooked in the ollas, the maíz, pulled off of the corn. You either roasted the corn or you pulled it off of the husk, and you made it as a paste into a tortilla without having to fry it because you didn't have the lard. You put it in the fire, you baked it, and you pulled it out, and you had a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of a thing.
No, I'm getting
and,
hungry.
Oh, I'm thinking about all kinds of stuff now. Are you kidding me? You brought up lentejas. I'm thinking, you know, I've got a bag sitting at home that's crying out for just sitting in a pot for about an hour, and we're good. And with some tomato. Mm-hmm. See, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, when you start thinking about diet, there are easy ways to change your diet without having to be so radically different that it's going to make you feel traumatically damaged. No, because the bottom line is we're looking at health. Mm-hmm. We're looking at staying healthy, getting into the third age. When you're 50 and above, the goal is to try to stay as long as you can on this earth without having to feel as much pain as you might be feeling one way or the other, mainly because of just attrition of the body. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, as this brings back to, is learning how to screen yourself for things like colorectal cancer.
Mm-hmm. And I think Maria makes a really good point. The shift from treatment of something that's already happened to preventing it in the first place is the key. And, you know, wellness, thinking about wellness and prevention is really important because it's very hard. I mean, obesity in particular, there's no magic cure. It's very difficult to treat. We don't have any treatments. It's all about lifestyle. It's about changing the way that you live, changing your diet, changing the exercise, and bringing more activity into your life. So that's not easy to do. And, you know, a far more productive way of thinking is prevention. And with our children, we really have a responsibility to prevent them from becoming obese. That's what we're talking about right now. Because that's much easier than trying to treat them once they are obese. And it's the same with, you know, diabetes or hypertension or colorectal cancer. You know, once you have it, then you're in a completely different ballpark for what's required, and it's very much more difficult to treat. It's more difficult to live with. But if you can kind of get ahead of the game a little bit and think, okay, let's just prevent it, because in the long run, it's easier. In the long run, it's much easier on you to prevent it than to deal with the consequences of it.
One of the things that I'm sure you've run into in your studies is that people don't understand how the digestive system works in the first place. They don't understand that when you eat, you should eat with moderation, and that there are enzymes in your body that sit there and tell you after a certain amount of time, I guess the average is maybe 20 minutes, I'm full, I'm done. That's it. Don't top me off. And yet you see us supersize everything until our stomach is hanging out in Ciudad Juárez and when the rest of your body's in Northeast El Paso. So, you have that issue. And then they become couch potatoes afterwards and are sedate. So now you haven't done anything with the stomach in order to chew that thing up. When in reality, that stomach has to be in motion to kind of like grind up everything in there in order to create the calories that burn up, you know, some of that, and then whatever is left becomes waste material that comes out. And so that's the delicate part of everything. No one seems to be understanding that once you eat, maybe you should be a little more energetic and go for a walk for about a half hour or so, you know?
No, that's very true. And we do a lot of things that don't help that situation. You know, as you rightly pointed out, once your stomach is full, hormones from your brain tell it that your stomach is full, but there's a delay. So if you keep eating and eating and eating and you're eating fast, by the time you figure out from the brain signaling that you're full, you've already overeaten double the amount. And this is kind of happens a lot when people eat in front of the TV or they're eating, watching a movie with those big tubs of popcorn. They're distracted and they're not listening to their body signals. And it's our life, unfortunately. You know, everyone's really busy. They work, they come home, they take care of the kids, they take care of grandparents. Some people are working two jobs trying to make ends meet. And, you know, no one's slowing down and thinking about these things. And in the long run, it does make sense that if you can start thinking about those things, that you'll do yourself a favor because, you know, you won't have arthritis and aches and pains and all the other things that go along with obesity and just being unhealthy and eating unhealthy. People that really make the radical changes in their lives, they really notice the difference in how they feel. Mm-hmm. Not just how they look or whether they have a disease or not, just on a day-to-day basis, how they feel. They feel more energetic. And, you know, it's not something you can do by yourself. You have to have buy-in from your whole family. And because it's a lifestyle change that has to happen with everyone that's living under that roof. You can't do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. So you have to get everybody kind of engaged in the process, the children, your husband, your wife. That's the only way that it works, your coworkers. So, you know, studies show people are more successful in making those changes in groups when they have support, social support from their family and friends.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I have a group of friends that we are all born in the same year and aging together, and we made a little pact of trying to stay healthy, even though we're not spring chickens anymore. But each of us, we get our husband support. My husband supports me a lot, and really making time to do things with the family. A good friend of mine has three kids. I have one kid. But we try and devote family time to just being outside, staying active. And inside, family lucha libre. It's just so creative what you can do just to be active. Lucha libre is like wrestling, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. being active for a little bit.
Yeah, that's all it takes. All it takes is a little imagination and using your muscles, including your brain, in order to make your life a lot healthier. Let's go ahead and talk once again about your talk coming up on this Wednesday.
Okay, so there's a talk. I'm giving it with Dr. Mark Zuckerman. It's open to the public, and we're going to talk about colorectal cancer, how to prevent it, what happens if you get it, what are the symptoms, the warning signs, and we're going to have a replica, an inflatable colon replica for people to walk through to learn more about the colon, and it's this Wednesday, March the 27th, between 5:30 and 6:30, and RSVP to Maria Chaparro at 757-3178, extension 302.
Very nice. Mikasa Sukasa, we need to talk more about health, wellness, lifestyles, different types of cancers, and how to prevent them. We need to talk about everything. Diabetes, you know that the door is now wide open for you guys. Come in and let's sit down and start talking about how to stay healthy in the third age.
Thank you. We'd be happy to come and talk more.
Muchas gracias. It's been fun.